I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Lee Pepper. He is the author of Never Outmatched: Military Strategies to Lead, Innovate, and Win the Modern Marketing Battlefield. Lee brings a combined experience in the United States Army, IT, and marketing to build great teams and leaders. And he currently consults in marketing and operations and specializing in behavioral healthcare. And Lee and I were chatting a little bit in the green room before this. And if you're a leader, you definitely need to listen in, because I think maybe it may challenge some of your beliefs. Maybe not, but I think it's going to be awesome. Lee, welcome.
Thank you so much, Craig. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So obviously you know, we were kind of chatting it up. You were in the Army. I was in the Marines. We welcome you guys also.
Yes. And what is that, Craig? They say, like, you're not an ex-Marine, you're a former Marine, or do I have it backwards?
No, you have it right. Yeah. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Yeah.
And yeah, as a matter of fact, on LinkedIn this morning, I tagged a Marine in a post, and he, you know, he threw a little Semper Fi. That's how we greet each other. It's a very, very good brotherhood. It was an exceptional time in my life. But anyway, so what'd you do in the Army?
So I enlisted when I took a year out of college, my sophomore year. I enlisted as a 76 Yankee supply clerk. So while I was enlisted, I was in quartermaster corps. And after a couple of years, I was getting close to finishing my degree. I had the opportunity to go to officer candidate school and then got commissioned as an armor officer, then went to Fort Knox for armor school. And then I was assigned to a civil affairs battalion, and that's where I completed most of my service in the reserves in civil affairs.
Okay, armor officer. Does that mean, so I'm trying to nail that down. So in the Marines, when I think of armors, that's, you know, when we went to the range every year, we had to go down to the armory, check out a weapon and take
That's driving the M1s.
Driving the M1s. Oh.
Yeah. So in fact, in armor school, we had three Marines, because the Marines don't have their own tank school. So they use the Army tank school. So I had the chance to serve with three Marines, you know, back in 1992 that were in armor school with me.
Wow. And H.R. McMaster, did you ever serve under him?
No.
Yeah. Cause he was moving. He was what, like a lieutenant or a captain in the first Gulf War?
Yeah, so that would have been, yeah, I did, yeah, I mean, maybe our paths crossed, but I didn't work with him.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think, you know, I think this will tie into where we're ultimately going. You know, there had been, in that battle, you know, so you remember, for those that don't remember, you of course remember, you know, they used the Marines as a distraction. The Iraqis thinking the Marines were going to do an amphibious assault, and the Marines were out there doing all these exercises, kicking up a bunch of water to get their focus there. Meanwhile, the M1s went around the northern side of Kuwait City, kind of boxed them in, kicked butt and took names. And they told, the instructions were, there were certain lines you couldn't cross. And I think one of them was, you can't cross into Iraq.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for those that don't remember, I mean, it was, from one way, it was one aspect, it was amazingly wonderful, but another aspect, it really worried me, because I called it war by Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those ones could shoot a Soviet T-72 while it was going 50 miles per hour, bouncing over the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just knocking off one T-72 after another. And at one point, H.R. McMaster crossed into Iraq and came back.
Mm-hmm. I think, Craig, what's so fascinating is, I mean, this is 30, 40-year-old technology. Isn't it amazing what we were doing back then? I mean, the M1s with the jetpack engines and just the speed and the weight. I mean, it was an unbelievable machine. And I have to imagine that today's versions are probably so advanced with some of their, systems that are now a lot more computerized than when you and I were in.
Well, and yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, oh my goodness. Yeah, we were, yeah. The tech is just insane how far it's gone.
And Craig, we were talking in the green room when we got started. I mean, that I mentioned that battle or elements of that battle, kind of what you just described. That was a classic tactic or strategy that Schwarzkopf implemented there called the anvil and hammer. It was something used by the Carthaginians, it was used by the Greeks, by the Romans. And here we are 2,000, 3,000 years later, and Schwarzkopf was applying that similar strategy to great effect, in a modern battlefield. And I think that's what I was so excited when I was writing this book. And I was like, wow, I've really got to do some research on the anvil and hammer because it's something that I like to use as a great metaphor in business. And that's where I'm so excited about some of the things that I've written for veterans who have served, who may struggle sometimes with knowing how do I convert what I've learned in the military to the business world. And I think sometimes people struggle there. And I think in my book I've laid out a number of elements that maybe some people don't think about that, wow, that could really work in business.
Well, and the other wonderful thing that I think you were pointing out is you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's a playbook out there for almost anything you want to do. You may just have to translate it to the modern environment or the current environment or to something else. But there are proven strategies that have been used again and again over the course of history.
I get asked a lot, in interviews or, by people that are they're using me as a coach, well, what are you reading right now? What do you have in your nightstand? And I always laugh. I have an 1895 copy of Caesar's Commentaries on the Gallic War. And I regularly am reading different pages of that because I'm always finding inspiration, to something that was written, a couple thousand years ago.
I don't know if you remember General Gray. He was commandant in the Marine Corps, I think right about the time you were going in the Army, but he decided two things. He felt like the Marine Corps had become soft, and so he wanted to turn the Marines back into warriors, but he also felt like they weren't reading enough. And so he put on the required reading list for all NCOs that you had to read The Art of Warfare, 2,000-year-old book.
Yeah, absolutely. And
So,
I think when you think about some of Sun Tzu's writings, I mean, one of the examples I have in the book of Joan of Arc, and a lot of people, we don't have a lot of contemporary commentary from Joan of Arc from back then. A lot of it is just what people said they heard, during her trial or from, the people. But, her big innovation was that she just had the guts to go to King Philip and just request if they could actually go on the offensive one day. Could they attack the British? That was all she was asking, was they had been for years, had been defense, 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 trying to negotiate, negotiate, negotiate. And it was a war of attrition for them and they were losing. And she just went to request from the king, could we just attack today? That was her one big innovation. And I find that in business sometimes, Craig, we're so busy trying to do these very complicated, processes when maybe it's just, could you let your team attack today? Could you let them go on the offensive today? Like maybe that's the big innovation.
Well, in my book, that should be like every day. I hate it when I had some sales guys come to me once. This was back when I was marketing semiconductors for mobile phones, and we had a new product that was just killing it. We were kicking butt and taking names. And the sales guys came to me and they were quivering and they were like, "Craig, our competitors out there bashing us to the customers. They're telling them how they're taking on unbelievable risk to design in this product." And I looked at them and I said, "Guys, that's fantastic news." And they're like, and they looked at me like I'd lost my mind. I said, "We've earned the right to be bashed. Now let's attack."
Well, the opening paragraph of the book, once you get through the preface and the foreword, is I relate the very first day that we were inside an M1 Abrams. And, here we are, I was a young lieutenant, Butterbar, all the ego, but, of course, all the NCOs, they know they're really running the show, not the lieutenants. But, we're in that M1, and back then, the NCOs, they were sitting in a chair welded to the top of the M1, and they had, they were mic'd in so they could, kind of give us some advice. And that very first day, they start yelling, they're counting down, okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, what are you going to do now, Lieutenant? What are you going to do now? And the whole thing they were trying to drill into us was to make a decision. And it wasn't necessarily that you're going to make the right decision or the best decision, but it's that you were not going to be panicked. You're not going to be frozen. And I find that in business, I use that example all the time. It's like, I don't care that if you try something and it doesn't work well, great. We're going to know we don't do that again. But sometimes the biggest challenge to people is the indecision. That's what will get you overrun in a battle situation or will cause you to lose in a training situation, is this indecision. And that's what I find in business a lot. I'm always trying to coach people to don't let the status quo be be what you're working towards. You have to make a decision.
A great army general once said, "A good plan violently executed today beats a perfect plan executed next week."
Absolutely, absolutely. And I quote a lot, from Patton and from Eisenhower, and I think that there's still and what's interesting, Craig, less than 1% of Americans will serve in the military. And I don't say that as a judgment on our society. It's just where we are in an all-volunteer army. But that what means is that 99% of folks have not heard these things that to you and I are pretty common. It's kind of native to us because we've grown up in that world. And so that's where I think that I hope that the general population, that the way I've written this and I've tried to explain it as a mental model, will make it very accessible to people.
So, one valid point, absolutely. I just have to throw out one point of clarification. In the Marine Corps, they didn't teach us anything that somebody said in the Army. I had to learn that once I got out of the Marines because no, we're studying Chesty Puller. We're not studying Patton. But that is genius.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think that that's sometimes one of the things that I'm most memorable about in my time when I was working for Ross Perot, and I worked on his presidential campaigns, and I worked for Perot Systems. And Perot hired a lot of people from the military, and so you were always in a room where there was a Marine, Navy, Air Force, Army. And it was always before the meetings would start, there'd always be some banter. We always had a great time. I always enjoy that brotherhood.
Well, there's another Patton quote that I love, absolutely love. And speaking of old books, I'm going to plug a book, an old book, War as I Knew It, which, Patton's wife took letters that he had sent her during the war and compiled them into a book. And one of the letters he told his wife, he said, "I'm trying to teach the men the difference between strategy and tactics. With strategy, I try to teach them to be like a steamroller. You set a direction and go. But with tactics, you don't use a steamroller strategy. You respond to the situation, you grab them by the nose and kick them in the pants," which I imagine was quite vulgar in the 1940s.
And,
So what's that mean? What was he talking about?
well, I think that what the way I have applied it in modern day business is that we all have these great platforms. And when you think about, for marketing, whether it's, doing SEO or SEM through paid search, or whether it's doing, some of the platforms like TikTok and Instagram and YouTube, what ends up happening is we think we have a strategy, but all we're doing is jumping from platform to platform to platform, tactic to tactic to tactic. And we wonder why things are not sticking, why things are not working. And so that's why I always challenge in the book, and also challenge people that I work with, coaching today, is that we need to take a step back, and we need to understand the strategy. And that's where I get into what we were talking about earlier with commander's intent. We have to set the commander's intent. What is the mission? But you have to let your staff, your lieutenants, your captains, you have to let them go and execute. And they may be moving around, and that's great. Let them be innovative. So that's what that means to me. And Craig, I've had a great opportunity with this book coming out. I've gotten to network with Patton's grandson, Benjamin,
No
and
way.
he's doing some amazing things. He's based out of New York now. He's doing some amazing things where he's recording veteran stories. And so that was just one of these these things when you write a book and you start doing talks, like you just never know who you're going to run into and meet. So that's one of the things that I was, very excited about when I first started getting in touch with him.
All right, let's go conspiratorial for just a second, then we'll get back to the real world. Was Patton killed or did he die?
I forgot the name of the author, but I read the book that was claiming that the immigrant that had that caused the wreck was somehow maybe a Russian, spy or connected. So I don't know if I have a, I think personally I just believe that there was an accident, and it was a sad accident. He didn't have a seatbelt on and he broke his neck and, really suffered for many months before he finally passed. So I'm not sure that I completely buy in, but it's also one of these things where I'm not sure I will ever know. It's kind of like the Kennedy assassination. I don't know if I'm ever going to know, and so I just don't spend a lot of mental cycles on it, but it is interesting reading.
All right, let's get back to the real world.
Yeah. And Craig, you told me, hey, is anything off limits? And see, I honor
Yeah, absolutely.
that.
So I want to explore this leading versus managing, setting the strategy and giving people the latitude to do things. What does that look like in practice, and what keeps people frozen up from doing that?
Yeah, so it was a couple things in that question, I think, Craig. I think the first thing is that, leaders are leading people, managers are managing things. I've got a great quote from Admiral, Rear Admiral Grace Hopper, who was famous, quote there. I think that for me, what I'm always trying to get across to teams that I've led is that I want to set what the mission is. But because, like, I'm 56, Craig. There are amazing platforms that are just spinning up today that I'm not an expert on. But guess what? There might be a younger person, millennial, who is an expert. I have to trust them. I've set the mission. We've established what the parameters are, the scaffolding. So we know what the budget is. We know what the schedule is. We know what good compliance, good governance. So that way we're not going to get out of bounds. But I have to let them go and accomplish it. Because, when you're in a training exercise or on the battlefield, you never know what's going to be thrown at you. You could have weather, terrain you didn't know about. You could lose communication. And you're the leader is not always going to be there. You have to make sure that your captains and your lieutenants have that freedom of movement to go exercise and complete the mission. And so many times in business, we let things like governance and compliance, right, get in the way of innovation. And that's where I said earlier, you cannot command innovation. And so if you're listening to this, you're going, I wonder why my team is not innovative. I would challenge you to think that it's probably because you're micromanaging or you have a bureaucracy that is strangling that innovation. And Ross Perot, we would be at our offices and you would see him in the hallway, right? And he always would say, that bureaucracy is like a snake. And he would always go, what do you do with a snake? You kill it. Like he would just say things like that to us, and I think that's the other thing too, that I write about the Kazarin Pass debacle, when the Americans first went into North Africa during World War II. And that was when Eisenhower put Patton in charge. And within 90 days, we had ousted the Nazis. And so that was where somebody like Patton, he had a real demonstrable effect on the outcome of our success in World War II because he didn't wait around. He didn't wait for the status quo. He went and attacked, right away. And I think that sometimes as business leaders, we're nervous, about letting these people we've hired, that we've invested, that we've, trained. Like sometimes we're holding them back too much, is what I see a lot.
Well, and something I heard, I'm trying to remember the term that was used. So Patton wasn't an analytical. He was more just kind of, he had a little bit of an impulsive nature. And one of the things that made him formidable against the Germans was the Germans were sitting around trying to analyze what he was doing and make sense of it. And while they were analyzing, he was kicking their butt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the things, Major General Friedenhall, he was the one that led the American forces there in Tunisia in the Kazarin Pass. He was commanding from a fortified bunker many miles from the front line. And that was something that Patton was not in his nature. Right? Patton was on the front line. He was hearing from the troops, the good, the bad, the ugly. He was personally getting involved in getting the tanks, additional armament. He was personally involved in making sure that they actually had air cover that the British had promised that hadn't been there. So we in business cannot lead from behind a spreadsheet. And so I think sometimes we get stuck. I mean, when I was at Foundations, I used to drive some of my C-suite partners nuts because I worked in an open environment. I was there on the floor. And we had it, when we sold to UHS, we had 30 people in marketing, and I was there on the floor with them. And a lot of my compatriots that were in the C-suite, they didn't know how I did it. And so part of it is, you have to be disciplined, but my team knew I was there, and also I was picking up on things. I was hearing things that are going on, so I couldn't do their job, but I could remove barriers for them. Like I could get involved and remove barriers so they could go and complete the mission. And I think that a lot of times we're too easily stuck sitting in an office trying to manage behind a spreadsheet instead of maybe doing the management by walking around. And that was something I learned very early on at Pro Systems from Ross personally, was that he would just pop in, and it would drive some people nuts because you just never know what somebody going to say to Ross. Is he going to embarrass me? Or are they going to say they don't like something? But that was really key to his leadership style, and I think Patton's.
Well, and Sam Walton, if you've never read War, or no, sorry, wrong book. If you've never read Made in America, it's a great book. One of his favorite things to do was pick up a box of donuts and go to the truck depots. And he would take the truck driver's depot donuts and sit with them, have coffee and donuts. And he'd say he got the best intel. He could find out from the drivers what was going on at Walmarts all around the region, just by talking to the drivers.
Well, I've got a chapter in the book on intelligence, and I think that that's a lost art in corporate America today. And like, I learned early on, there was a woman that worked at Pro Systems named Libby Kraft. And when she was working at EDS, she told me a story that when they were trying to build and trying to hire people, right, they were like, this is before the internet, so you have to go and like know people, that she would go and she would look at the competitor. She would get license plates, right? She would look at where they were trying to hire computer programmers, and she would go and do the license plates. And then she had a friend that I think was sweet on her that worked at the police department, and she would go and get their names and addresses. And now she knew who she could send letters to, to try to recruit. And I think that we've lost that kind of art in actually personally like really doing some deep intel. And I think that there's so much that we could learn from what our competitors are doing and kind of start to then unwrap kind of what their success is and give us some ideas. I think sometimes we're just too busy not spending the time to do the deep dive. I listen, that's one of the things in behavioral health. I've listened to over 10,000 phone calls coming in for behavioral health. So I know what customers are telling us on the phone. I'm hearing how they heard about us. I know what they're struggling with. And I think that that's one of the things that made me personally successful. But a lot of people that were in my shoes and competitors weren't willing to do that work. And so, that was part of kind of like the 10,000 hours. It was me listening to all these phone calls. And I still do it today with some of my consulting clients. If I want to know what's going on out there in the local space, I just listen to the phone calls, and you just pick up and learn so much.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just getting ready to comment on that. I mean, I'm blown away. 10,000 calls?
Yeah, because that's one of the things. Attribution in marketing can be very difficult, and there's a lot of great tools, and a lot of things are automated, and you've got your codes that are coming in, and you can see how many times they've been on your website and this and that. But one of the things that's really critical is when you listen to the phone call in behavioral health, when you listen to the phone call, and then when you have your centers trained to ask how you heard about us and to actually do a secondary question about, oh, I heard about you from my therapist, or what's your therapist name? Or I heard about you on Google. Do you remember what you Googled? Do you remember what you searched? You get so much intelligence, and it's a discipline, but wow, so many companies miss out on that. So many companies just make an assumption that, well, the click came from this, or the phone call came from this click. And there's like a whole nother level that you can get to, and it just takes a little bit of effort, and all of a sudden you get this vast amount of information. And now it's not subjective. That's the other thing. In marketing, we have to fight our cognitive biases all the time. And you see it from other departments. But once you're making the decisions based on objective information versus subjective, then you can really start to scale and get some leverage.
I had a client once where I listened to some of their inbound calls, and I was shocked. And I heard a couple of the things I heard, and I don't think the person who was answering the call was intentionally trying to be rude, but listening to it from an outside perspective, it was like, wow, if I was the person calling in, I'd feel horrible about this. And this is, unfortunately, I never took her advice on this, but small tweaks, getting in the trenches and listening to those things, you get a perspective. You can order all the Gartner reports you want. You're going to get more out of spending, an hour a week listening to sales calls than these big reports.
Most companies, when there's a budgetary stress or they're looking to cut a budget, what's the first thing they cut? Training. And then they wonder why their teams aren't performing as well. That should be the last thing you cut. And it's the same thing, Craig. It was the same experience when I started listening to you. Part of my role as a CMO, I was all of a sudden, when I got promoted, I was taking over the call center, the admissions team. And you start listening. That's how I got in, listening to phone calls. And it was born out of what we did at Fort Knox. The first week at Fort Knox, they had video cameras. This is going back 30, 40 years ago. They had video cameras set up, and we were reading our orders of the day in front of the video camera. And guess what? When you see yourself, all of a sudden you realize that you don't really have a good command presence. You better practice. And so all of a sudden we had to understand that you got to get your hands out of your pocket. You can't be moving or can't be doing in and on. But it was that experience of seeing ourselves on camera, which then allowed me to kind of take that into the behavioral health space and say, we got to listen to these calls, right? We got to know. And then, because you're right, the people, they want to do a great job. They just didn't know. And so once we started playing some calls and they could hear themselves, they're like, wow, I do need to shift, how. And that's when you get into things like training them on the boomerang statement, and giving them some of these little techniques, which are sales techniques, but from a therapeutic perspective, they're motivational interviewing. And so part of it was just kind of removing all this. And now all of a sudden that some of the teams I work with, they really embrace that, they appreciate having somebody to kind of tap them on the shoulder and say, have you ever thought about doing this? Because they do want to help that person on the phone. And whether it's getting them in the treatment or whether it's like in your case, whether it's connecting them with a service that's going to help them be successful, that's really at the end of the day, what is the most successful for businesses.
Lee, this has been amazing. We got to wrap up, but I think the biggest takeaway that I got was from what you were saying, make the strategy clear and give the people the latitude, the people doing the work, the latitude to pick the tactics that help them achieve the strategy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Set the strategy and get out of their way. You got to hold them accountable, but you got to get out of the way, because you can't apply your cognitive bias just because, you've got all this great experience. There's all these new innovative things that are coming in. Let them help you, lead that way. You got to set it, then let them go and execute.
All right. So the book is Never Outmatched.
Look, I got
Military.
my copy too.
That's
And these are the advanced galleys. It's a hardback, so those will be out, those will be out soon. But yeah.
that's awesome. Never Outmatched: Military Strategies to Lead, Innovate, and Win in the Modern Marketing Battlefield. Lee, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies. How can people reach you?
Yeah, they can go to neveroutmatchedbook.com. That's the website for the book, and of course it's available on all major platforms. And they can also, I always tell people, connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm somebody that actually checks my LinkedIn messages. So if I can ever be of service, and I'm doing a lot, I'm out on the speaking circuit. So if I can ever be of service or provide a talk or even, a consultation for a company, I'm always happy to do that.
That's great. Well, thanks again.
Thank you, Craig.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies.
I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.